Atamadava Kunjabihari. Jana Vallabha Giri Vardhari Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vardhari Yashoda Nandana Hrida Jana Rama Yashoda Nandana Hrida Jana Rama Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Kunja Vihari Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vardhari Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vardhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Randana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Randana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari His Divine Grace, Shilesi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Nitai Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Gauri. Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. All grace the assembled devotees. All grace the assembled devotees. All grace the assembled devotees. All grace to Sri Sri Guru Gaur. ॐ नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad-Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 6, Purusha Sukta confirmed, text 22. Word meanings, yasmat, from whom, andam, the universal globes, virat, the gigantic universal form, jagye, appeared. Bhuta, elements, indriya, senses, guna atmakaha, qualitative, tat dravyam, the universes and the universal form, etc., atyagat, surpassed, vishvam, all the universes, gobihi, by the rays, surya, the sun, iva, like, atapam, distributed rays and heat. Yasmarandam virajagye Bhutendriya gunatmaka Tadravyam atyagad vishvam Gobhi surya ivatapam Yasmarandam virajagye Bhutendriya gunatmaka Tadravyam atyagad vishvam Gobhi surya ivatapam Yasmarandam virajyagye Bhutendriya gunatmaka Tadravyam atyagad vishvam Gobhi surya ivatapan
Bhutendriya gunatmaka
Tadravyam atyagad vishvam
Translation. From that personality of Godhead, all the universal globes and the universal form with all material elements, qualities, and senses are generated. Yet he is aloof from such material manifestations, like the sun, which is separate from its rays and heat. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The Supreme Truth has been ascertained in the previous verse as Purusha or Purushottama, the Supreme Person. The Absolute Person is the Ishvara, or the Supreme Controller, by his different energies. The Ekapad Vibhuti, manifestation of the material energy of the Lord, is just like one of the many mistresses of the Lord, by whom the Lord is not much attracted, as indicated in the language of the Gita, Vinna Prakriti. But the region of the Tripad Vibhuti, being a pure spiritual manifestation of the energy of the Lord, is, so to speak, more attractive to him. The Lord, therefore, generates the material manifestations by impregnating the material energy, and then within the manifestation, he expands himself as the gigantic form of the Vishvarupa. The Vishvarupa, as it was shown to Arjuna, is not the original form of the Lord. The original form of the Lord is the transcendental form of Purushottama, or Krishna himself. It is very nicely explained herein that he expands himself just like the sun. The sun expands itself by its terrible heat and rays, yet the sun is always aloof from such rays and heat. The impersonalist takes into consideration the rays of the Lord without any information of the tangible, transcendental, eternal form of the Lord known as Krishna. Therefore, Krishna, in his supreme personal form, with two hands and flute, is bewildering for the impersonalist, who can accommodate only the gigantic Vishwarupa of the Lord. They should know that the rays of the sun are secondary to the sun, and similarly, the impersonal, gigantic form of the Lord is also secondary to the personal form as Purushottama. The Brahma Samhita 537 confirms this statement as follows. Ananda chinmaya rasa pratibhavitabhis thabhirya eva nijarupataya kalabhi goloka eva nivasatya kilatma bhuto Govindanadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, the one who enlivens the senses of everyone by his personal bodily rays, resides in his transcendental abode called Goloka. Yet he is present in every nook and corner of his creation by expansion of his happy spiritual rays, equal in power to his personal potency of bliss. He is therefore simultaneously personal and impersonal by his inconceivable potency, or he is the one without a second, displaying complete unity in a diversity of material and spiritual manifestations. He is separate from everything, and still nothing is different from him. Omagyanatimirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya yakshurunmilitamena tasmai shri gurave namaha sita paupada ki jaya. This chapter began, now this is called Purusha Sukta confirmed, so you may have heard this reference, Purusha Sukta. These are famous prayers. They're mentioned at the beginning of the 10th canto, when Bhumi Devi and the demigods went to petition Lord Vishnu for help, they recited the Purusha Sukta prayers, very famous prayers. They glorify the Mahapurusha. Actually, it's in those prayers where it talks about how the Mahapurusha is worshipped with ingredients of himself. Because Lord Brahma and others, they wanted to worship the Lord, but they didn't have anything in the beginning. All they had was the Virat Rupa, actually, the universal form. So it's described that they took parts of him and they worshipped him. So the scholars, they take it, the idea that they cut God up and somehow use pieces of God and they worship God with his pieces. They have these strange ideas. They take things literally sometimes. So what are these Purusha Sukta prayers? So the idea is the Purusha Sukta prayers are about or addressed to the Virat Purusha, the Supreme Lord, in that way. So the first verses of this chapter up to text 17 are about the Virat Rupa, the universal form of the Lord. And then we start getting glorification of the Purusha behind the Virat Purusha, as Prabhupada is speaking about in this purport. Actually, in the purport, he talks about Krishna specifically, but we know that Garbhodakshaya Vishnu is actually the source of what we call the Virat Rupa. Now, the Virat Rupa is not an actual form of the Lord, it's a kind of conception. But the way it's presented in many places in the Bhagavatam, it sounds like you're talking about a real person, a real form of the Lord. But it's a material, the Lord's material energy. And the point is to connect it with God. So you have some understanding that there's a person behind it all. So look at the material world and see it in that way. So beginning with text 18, we hear about how there are these two worlds, really, the Ekapad Vibhuti and the Tripad Vibhuti. Now, Srila Prabhupada mentions that in the purport today, so I was going to talk about that a little bit. Usually we get the understanding, it's kind of bewildering because you think, well, it's all infinite, so how can you have three quarters of infinite or one quarter of infinite? Those are still infinite. Actually, you can get so many infinities from infinity. Sometimes I think of this, just like the rational numbers. You have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, so it goes infinitely. But you also have 1.5, 2.5, 3.5, 4, and all in between. You actually have an infinite number between 1 and 2. So from this plays well into the idea of Om Purnamada Purnamidam, Purnat Purnamudachyate. From the infinite, Purna, from the complete, you can get so many other complete wholes from it. So from infinity, you can still get so many infinities. So this idea that, you know, three quarters, the material world is, you know, 1/4, and the spiritual world is 3/4 of everything. It's just a kind of way to think about how the material world is kind of insignificant. Now, there's another way to look at this whole thing, which Prabhupada doesn't talk about, but our acharyas do. Another way of thinking about or describing the characteristics of these two, the Tripad Vibhuti. Pada just means a part. So the world of three parts and the world of one part. So instead of thinking 1/4 and 3/4, you can think of it as one world has three main constituents to it, and the other world has one main constituent to it. So I'm going to read from some commentary of Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur. Now, Srila Prabhupada, he talks about... First, I'm going to go back to something Prabhupada wrote in 2619. So we're now at 22. So as I was saying, from 18 up to where we are now, there's been some description. This is actually somewhat in the context. Prabhupada in his purports keeps referring back to this idea of Ekapad Vibhuti and Tripad Vibhuti. So in 2619, he wrote, out of the total manifestation of the Sundini energy of the Lord, 1/4 is displayed in the material world and 3/4 are displayed in the spiritual world. So here Prabhupada brings in this technical term, Sundini. So of course, Krishna has three primary energies, the Samvit, Sundini, and Hladini. This corresponds to Satchit Ananda. We tend to think of it that way, Satchit Ananda. So sometimes we have these lists, I often think of this in our books, and we think, we think, why is it like this? Why these three exactly? But if you think about it, you think, well, it makes so much sense, actually. First, Sundini means just existence. Sometimes the idea is there in philosophy when they're trying to understand what is God. God is a concept. So they have the idea that, well, God is existence itself, or God is reality. There's only one reality. It exists. Something exists. So this is Sundini. Something exists. Sometime, one time there was a conversation, somebody, I think they were from the, somebody's phone is ringing. It's distracting. Someone asked Prabhupada, I think they were from the Mensa Society. Somebody asked Prabhupada, why is there anything? First Prabhupada kind of chuckled like, what? What kind of question is that? But basically what Prabhupada's explanation was, there's anything because of Krishna. Because there's Krishna, there's anything. So Krishna, he's the source of, he's the source of existence. His one potency of Sundini means existence. Actually, there are different personalities in charge of these three also. Existence is under the control of Lord Balaram. Or Balaram is the personification of existence, you might say. Krishna is, in one sense, separate from everything. And Krishna wants to enjoy everything. So Balaram, it's from him that everything exists so that Krishna can enjoy it. That's the Sundini potency. And then Krishna himself, he's the power behind, you can say, the chit potency, or samvit. That means consciousness, actually. Prabhupada often uses the word knowledge. We say eternity full of bliss and knowledge. It's not knowledge in the sense that we think of as, you know, knowledge is contained in books, that kind of thing. It actually means consciousness. In fact, in the Vedanti Tattva Vidas Tattvam Yad Gyanam Advayam Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavaniti Shabdyate, this important verse in the second chapter of the first canto of the Bhagavatam. The word that's used there for the absolute truth is that it's Advaya Gyan. Advaya means it's one. There's only one truth. I was thinking one way we can think of that is that, well, there's only one reality. We're trying to figure out what it is, but it can only be one thing. So Advaya Gyan, what is that one reality? It's Gyan, but Gyan here means consciousness, actually. It means chit. So that's Krishna. The Samvit potency, that's overseen by Krishna himself. And then, of course, the third of these three is Hladini Shakti. Hladini means that's Srimati Radharani. She's Krishna's Hladini Shakti, and Krishna, that's how Krishna enjoys. In fact, Krishna only enjoys his Hladini potency. He's enjoying Radharani in all her expansions, all of the enjoyable things in existence. Ultimately, they're coming from Srimati Radharani, who of course is an aspect of Krishna. She's one with and different from Krishna. So Prabhupada uses this word here, just elaborating a little bit, where he says, out of the total manifestations of the Sundini energy of the Lord, so in other words, everything that exists, one-fourth is the material world and one-fourth is displayed in the spiritual world. So then in that same purport, he says, in the material world, the planetary systems are arranged in three spheres called Triloka, or Swarga, Marcha, and Patala. So we hear about the 14 planetary systems, and we also hear about the three worlds. This phrase comes up a lot. All over the three worlds, what does that mean? It seems it could be broken up in different ways, what the meaning of three worlds is. But here Prabhupada takes it as the three parts of the material world. And they're summarized sometimes. We know there are 14 of them, but sometimes they're just listed as these three groups. Swarga means the heavenly planets and those above it. Marcha means the middle region, the earthly planet where we are. And below that, the subterranean, they're actually literally called the subterranean heavenly planets, although we think of them as hellish because there's no Krishna consciousness there. The bottom one, the very bottom one, is called Patala. So sometimes these three words are used for all three, Swarga, Marcha, and Patala. So he says, so the planetary systems are arranged in three spheres called Triloka, and all of them constitute only one-fourth of the total Sundini energy. Beyond that is the spiritual sky where the Vaikuntha planets exist beyond the coverings of seven material strata. So now Prabhupada's I'm not sure what he refers to. He's referring to actually the seven upper planetary systems, or if he's talking about the constituents of the material energy. Anyway, in none of the triloka planetary systems can one experience the status of immortality, full knowledge, and bliss. So the material world doesn't have that. These things, immortality, you can't live forever in the material world, and you can't be fully knowledge, again, you can say consciousness, full consciousness of what reality is, and full bliss. And then he says, factual deathlessness, fearlessness, and freedom from old age, disease, etc. are possible only beyond the spherical material coverings of the material sky. So, I'm trying to figure out the order of this, brother. I need to go back to the verse. But in text, death, root of, is it 18? Anyway, let me continue reading here. So now here's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, part of his comment. This is the verse, his translation, or his suggested translation, Bhanu Swami's translation, according to the commentary of Vishwanath. The wise know that the living beings are situated within the portions designated by the Lord, whose feet protect all places. That's another reason they're called Pada, because there are, everything is situated at the lotus feet of the Lord, Pada. So now this important part I'm getting to here. Eternity, absence of sickness, and absence of fear of committing offenses are fixed in the spiritual world, situated above the three gunas. So I'll read the comment, part of his commentary here. Above the coverings of the universe, Trimurdhna, that's from the verse, Sanskrit, there is no death, amritam, no sickness, kshemam, and no fear arising from offenses to the Lord among the persons there. Absence of fear from time is already covered in the word amritam. This verse explains the Purusha Sukta phrase Padosya Vishvabhutani Tripadasya Amritam Divi. The living entities of the universe are one quarter, and in the spiritual world there are three parts. In the spiritual world of three parts, everything is eternal. So what's being referred to here? Let me read Srila Prabhupada's translation. This is text 19. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is to be known as the supreme reservoir of all material opulences by the one-fourth of his energy in which all the living entities exist. Deathlessness, fearlessness, and freedom from the anxieties of old age and disease exist in the kingdom of God, which is beyond the three higher planetary systems and beyond the material coverings. So there seems to be some suggestion that the tripada can also mean it has these three constituents. Not that it's three-fourths, you know, in a kind of geometrical kind of way. But it has these three parts to it. So what are these three parts? Deathlessness, fearlessness, and freedom from the anxieties of old age and disease. These are the three. And in the verse we have this, amritam, kshemam, and abhayam. Now amritam, of course, means deathlessness, so, and abhaya means fearlessness. And kshemam, it's, the acharyas quote this in different ways. I was looking online to see it. Really, it means auspiciousness. That's the root definition of it is auspiciousness. So what is it? An auspicious place is a place where there's no old age, disease, and death. There's no suffering. Everything is good there. So that's the spiritual world. There are no problems in the spiritual world. That's kshemam. So amritam, kshemam, and abhayam, these three are characteristics of the spiritual world. These three padas are there, these three parts. And the material world is the place of mrityu, the place of death. That's the one overriding quality of the material world. It's ekapad, vibhuti. Vibhuti means, of course, opulence, or energy, or expansion, kind of expansion. It's Krishna's energy, you're all expanding from him. So the material world is the place of deathlessness. So we can see the stark contrast between these two. There's one place, no deathlessness, no fear, everything is auspicious. In the other place, everyone's just dying. That's the Ekapada Vibhuti. So let me really read a little bit more from these commentaries. This is more from Vishwanath Chakrabarti. This is from the verse 20. It says, this verse explains the previous verse, the one I was just referring to. Beyond the coverings of Prakriti, Bahi, Bahi is the external, described by the word Trimurdhana, top of the three gunas, exists the spiritual world described as three parts, Trayopada. So here you can see the idea. It's described as three parts, but three parts of what? Or does it mean it has three parts, or it's three parts of the four parts? So it can be taken either way, it seems like. The word cha after bahi indicates that sometimes the three parts exist within the material world in places like Mathura. So, of course, the spiritual world with the qualities of the spiritual world descends with Krishna. So the dhams, they have these characteristics. At least they're there, but they're hard to realize and connect to unless you're a devotee of the Lord. Now, let's see, this is... the acharyas, they... here's something from Jiva Goswami. Now, he quotes a verse. Prabhupada actually mentions it in verse 18. He says, the glories of the Lord in the transcendental 75%, and Prabhupada uses that, of the Lord's internal potency are stated in the Padma Purana. Now, Prabhupada is taking this from the commentaries of Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath Chakrabarti, who both quote a verse from the Padma Purana. Tripad vyapti param tam ni padosya bhabhavat puna. So I'm not going to read the whole thing. It's actually like two verses or three verses. But this is the translation. The spiritual realm is spread over three parts. One part... The spiritual world is spread over three parts. The one part is this world. The three-part spiritual world is eternal. The power of the one part is temporary. The eternal form of the Supreme Lord is situated in that glorious place. That form of the Lord is without decay, eternal, full of pastimes, eternally young, eternally enjoying, and surrounded by Sri Bhumi and Ishwari. So that's from the Padma Purana. So the idea is they're quoting this to show that the Lord exists in that three-part abode. And Jiva Goswami also says, according to this concept of Tripad Vibhuti, the following statement in the second canto should be understood. So that's the verse that mentions these three things. According to this concept of Tripad Vibhuti, the following statement, according to this concept that it's the place of transcendence, really. So again, he refers to this. It's amrita, it's abhaya. And now he translates kshema, the third one, which was saying auspiciousness. He refers to it as security. So that's another way of saying fearlessness, you can say also. So then in Jiva Goswami's commentary, which is quite extensive, he quotes over and over again many verses showing that he takes the three qualities, and for each one of these three qualities, he quotes a verse that demonstrates that this is actually there in Vaikuntha. In Vaikuntha, everything is immortal, everyone and everything is immortal, and there's complete fearlessness in Vaikuntha and so on. There's complete auspiciousness. So he quotes other shastras, especially from the Bhagavatam, to substantiate that Vaikuntha is the place where these three things exist. So let's see, this is more this is from Jiva Goswami. The four parts of the Lord's manifestation, Chatushpad Aishwarya, so of course Aishwarya means opulence, chatushpad, four parts, composed of three parts in the spiritual world and one part in the material world is described. Verse 17 describes one pada, since it is the place for results of karma, marchyam annam. So as I was saying, the Virat Purushas was described up through text 17. So we're describing the material world, or Shukadeva Goswami is describing the material world up through 17. So that's the place of marchya, marchya loka, the place of death. This illustrates the meaning of padosya vishva bhutani tripadasya amritam divi. Three parts are in the spiritual world and one part is made of all beings in the material world. Then in his commentary in text 20, the place of tripad is attained by persons belonging to ashrams with no offspring. there's actually a verse. Well, this is it, I guess. The brahmachari vanaprastha and sannyasa ashram. So if you want to go to Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, or Satyaloka, you have to be celibate. So from those three ashrams that are celibate. So here's another meaning of the word tripad. Since it is attained by three ashrams, it is also called tripad out of the four. So that's another reason why it can be called tripad, because even these places, this place, of course, these places are in some sense transcendental. They're not exactly transcendental, but if you read Brihad Bhagavatamrita, you'll see that all that goes on there is devotional service, sacrifice, and worshiping the Lord, and meditation on the Lord, and so on. So they're almost spiritual. They're above Swarga Loka. Swarga is a place of enjoyment. So then the place of renunciation and glorification of the Lord and so on. So in some sense, it's like Vaikuntha there, very close. Okay, so there's some more explaining these same points about tripad vibhuti. So just briefly, a little something about Prabhupada's commentary. It's interesting that Prabhupada talks about how the impersonalists, they can't appreciate the person of Godhead from whom all this energy, because the verse is about how the energy is all coming from the Purusha, the Supreme Purusha, the Lord Vishnu. But the impersonalists, they can only experience and appreciate the material energy, which Prabhupada says is not very attractive to Krishna. You know, she's described as standing behind the Lord. She's ashamed to come before the Lord. Because it's interesting because she's doing service for the Lord, but still, she doesn't like it. Because she has to punish the jivas, test them. Really what she's doing is she's preparing them for Krishna consciousness, getting rid of all their impurities. But she's a difficult taskmaster. She's the warden of the prison, so she has to punish the jivas. And the jivas, of course, they're Krishna's devotees. So she has this kind of uncomfortable relationship with the service that she has to do. So it's said that she's ashamed to come before the Lord. And if Prabhupada said here, Krishna's not really attracted to her because she's doing this nasty work. Even though she's doing it for a purpose, still, he's not exactly comfortable with it, you might say. Just like a loving parent has to rebuke the child sometimes, chastise the child, and you know the parent doesn't necessarily like doing it. Sometimes, you know, parents say, this hurts me more than it hurts you, right? That's the cliche, and the kid thinks, yeah, right. But in some sense, it's true. Krishna's uncomfortable with it. So the impersonalists, but still the impersonalists, they don't, for some reason, they're so contaminated, they can't approach Krishna. And that fact, that's why this Virat Purusha, one of the benefits of it is to help the impersonalists as well. Because they see the whole universe is God. This is a kind of an impersonal idea. People have that idea today, even. Yes, the universe is God. Nature is God, and so on. So it's kind of impersonal. So you can look at it and think that way. So it's better than the complete impersonalism, actually. You're personifying it in some way. In some ways, that's good. And in some way, and what you're doing, you're actually, because of your awe in relationship to nature, to the material energy, it's a kind of devotion. In fact, there are people who are really devoted to nature. So what is that nature? It's coming from Krishna. It's Krishna's energy. They're devoted to Krishna's energy, but they don't really know it. So that is some ways it's, you can say that's helpful. It has some purifying effect. Because they're in touch with Krishna, it's removed. Binna, as Prabhupada quotes from Bhagavad Gita, his prakriti, material energy, is separated from him. But still, ultimately, it's one and different. As Prabhupada ends the purport here, everything is one with Krishna, but separated from him at the same time. But still, he's never ultimately, nothing ultimately is separate from Krishna. Of course, that's the essential lesson we're trying to realize in Krishna consciousness, that everything is connected with Krishna. So that's part of why this whole description is here. It was explained earlier that because we, what do we know? What do we know? We know the material energy. That's all we know. We know the creation. So when you're talking about, when Suta Goswami or Shukadeva Goswami begins preaching, he'd say trying to bring people along to Krishna consciousness, first he talks about them in their situation. Okay, you know the material world. So you know what? Somebody created this material world. Let's hear about that. Let's hear about that person. So the idea is that it's something they can relate to. Because Krishna is really, he's so far beyond. That's why we can see that people, they can't relate to Krishna in a certain way. Well, how can this be God? This person, is it a boy, is it a girl? Why is it blue? And what's going on here? So Krishna is so far beyond, really. That, in fact, the whole Bhagavatam has 10 subjects. So the first 9 are leading us up to where we can kind of get, at least we can appreciate something about Krishna, because we're going to hear extraordinary things about him. So we don't think it's just mythology. No, this is the person behind the person who made this creation. So just imagine how great he is. The person who created all of this, he's just a part of a part of a part of a part of Krishna. So just imagine how great Krishna is. So that's why it's important to read these things. You know, in the Bhagavatam, they may not be as ecstatic as Krishna's leelas in Vrindavan, but they're important for us to get our foundation. Because we may think we know Krishna, but we don't really know Krishna. You don't know Krishna until you've transcended. Until you have prema, you don't really know Krishna. Because what do we know about what do we know about samvit, sandini, and ladini, these things? They're interacting and they're personified and so on. So when Krishna is doing something, it's sort of like, you know, it's like we're getting a picture, not the actual thing. The actual thing requires some more purification. All right, what's going on here? Let me stop. Let's read the translation again. From that personality of Godhead, all the universal globes and the universal form with all material elements, qualities, and senses are generated. Yet he is aloof from such material manifestations, like the sun, which is separate from its rays and heat. Our philosophy is achintya bheda bheda tattva. So this is a verse that supports that philosophical view. So, anybody have anything?
Two questions. Larry, do one for us. You were saying knowledge is interpreted as consciousness. I mean, knowledge is interpreted. Is that knowledge, you know, sat.
Yeah, I'm hearing knowledge, but I'm not hearing anything else. What else are you saying?
Interpreted as consciousness.
Yeah, the word, I'm saying the translation of the word chit, it probably often translates it as knowledge, but it's actually consciousness. You can say it's consciousness without content. Right? It's just consciousness itself without being conscious of something. But we think of knowledge in a different way. In fact, even the word knowledge itself is difficult. I mean, I've looked it up in the dictionary. What do you really mean by knowledge? What is knowledge? Is it data? Sometimes I think of it. Is knowledge data? Or is knowledge something I have? And is knowledge understanding? What exactly is knowledge? So So, of course, you can argue about consciousness, too, and the scientists, too. They're trying to figure out what consciousness is. But anyway, that was my simple point. The eternity full of bliss and knowledge. Knowledge, really, the idea is consciousness. And Prabhupada does translate it that way sometimes. But he tends to translate it as knowledge and not consciousness. But he does sometimes translate chit as consciousness.
Yeah, and the other part is, the text is saying, all the globes, I have to speak louder, all the globes coming from the Lord. But in one sense, it can sound like universes, but also it can sound like planets also. I mean, you know, depends how you interpret it.
He's talking about Andam. Andam means the egg-like universe. He's talking about the universes that
come out from
the pores of Mahavishnu. That seems to be the context.
I particularly noted one thing you read of describing the spiritual world, where it stated it's free from fear, which rises from offenses to the Lord.
Yeah.
I've never heard, I can understand how fear rises from mortality. But that was nice to hear that too. Did you have any thoughts
on
that?
Yeah, that was Vishwanath's way of presenting it. Mm-hmm. And Jiva Goswami presented it in a different way, but yes, that was the phrase. And, because the word is just abhaya. It means fear, no fear, fearlessness. But he translates it as no fear arriving from offenses to the Lord among persons there. Of course, in the spiritual world, there are no offenses. And we're here in the material world because of our offenses, ultimately. Actually, if you read the Madhuri or Kadambani, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, where he traces the steps, ado, shada, tatu, sadhu, sangha, and so on, all the way up to prema. So when he talks about anartha nivritti, getting rid of our anartas, there are different kinds of anartas. So ordinary, you know, breaking scriptural rules, for example, that's one, you get some kind of reaction for that. And that, you get rid of the reactions to those very quickly in Krishna consciousness. But the last stain, you can say, from the offenses to get rid of are those made by offenses. And those are not completely washed away until you get to the bhava stage. The reaction to offenses, especially offenses to Vaishnavas, are so, you know, the reaction that becomes so deep within us that it takes a lot of anartha nivritti and purification all the way up to the stage of bhava before that's completely washed away. Then you attain prema. So, yeah, that's why we hear how dangerous offenses are. So that Vishwanath Chakravarti is emphasizing all the fear in the material world. It's what keeps us here in the material world is our offenses against Krishna and his devotees.
Oh, thank you for that elucidation. Okay, also you mentioned kshemam. Someone translates it as secure. That was really noteworthy, how we can see all around us people in the material world, and we ourselves sometimes we get this sense of insecurity, you know, with what, not knowing the future. It made me recall, there's a verse in the first canto, if you can recall it, describing the only safe place in this material world is the chanting and hearing of the holy name of Krishna Katha. Do you recall what verse that is? The safe boat. It's a boat.
It's one of the early first verses of Shukadeva Goswami in the beginning of the second canto, I'm pretty sure.
Oh.
He said, how does it go? Abhayam. Anyway, the word is there. Hear about, glorify, remember, and worship the Lord if you want to be free from fear. That's the verse, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Actually, this word kshema, of course, it comes up in yoga kshemam baham yaham. Krishna says, I carry what they lack and preserve what they have. So there's preserve, security, you can get the idea, and the same concept.
Hari Bol, thank you for nice class. So you mentioned that to go to above Sargaloka, one needs to be celibate.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Read from somewhere. So Prabhupada writes in 1st canto, 9th chapter, 6th and 7th text, Vasishtha Muni, the great celebrated sage amongst the Brahmanas, well known as the Brahmarshi Vasishtha Deva, and at the end he says, he is also one of the seven rishis and husband of Arundhati. So it's not celibate. So can you please elaborate more?
I don't know. So I'm looking to see, I think it's one of the verses in this section where it says that. Yeah. This is text 20. The spiritual world, which consists of three-fourths of the Lord's energy, is situated beyond this material world, and it is especially meant for those who will never be reborn. Others who are attached to family and do not strictly follow celibacy vows must live within the three material worlds. Now, maybe it's in this purport. I think it was Vishwanath Chakravarti where he was talking about that. So I don't know. I can't fix it. Lord Brahma is, I don't know if he's what he is. Brahma's got a body that's out there, body of intelligence or something like that, pervades the whole material world, the whole universe. But actually, if you read in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita what's going on there, they don't have any need for sex life, that's for sure. They're all completely in samadhi, basically, all of the persons there. So I think, I'm pretty sure there's actually another verse that says, makes the same point. Celibates go there, and the grihasthas, they make it to Indra's place. Of course, the Bhagavatam, you know, it's really down in grihasthas, pretty much. There's a lot of really heavy talk about grihasthas. Of course, grihamedis, but even the context sometimes. Because who's one of the champion, you know, who's one of the heroes of the Bhagavatam is Narada Muni. So wherever he goes, he's just trying to get everyone to take sannyas. That's Narada Muni. He got in trouble with Dharma, with Daksha. When you read that section, you think, well, what's Daksha doing wrong? He's not doing anything wrong. He's raising his kids to be nice grihastha devotees. Huh? Of course, he blew it when he offended Narada Muni. But he was an exalted soul. He got darshan of the Lord, Daksha. But still, that's what, you know, Narada is kind of a troublemaker. He's a messenger. It's so interesting, actually. You go through the Bhagavatam, and Narada's everywhere. There's one purport that Gopi Pranadan Prabhu gives in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, which what Narada comes on the scene. It's like three or four pages. All the scenes, all the cameos of Narada Muni in the Bhagavatam. He comes in. Anytime somebody gets a message, pretty much, comes from Narada. Narada's always, he's the messenger delivering. But he does this also. He's really, you know, he's a brahmachari himself, Naishtika brahmachari. So he has this mood. That just, you know, get out of this. Like our sannyasis were preaching in the 70s, pulling all the grihastha men out of the temples and taking. And so I guess they inherited that from Narada Muni. He does that. So in any way, you get sometimes things, they seem contradictory, so you have to look at the context a lot of times to figure out, you know. Even Prabhupada, he says things sometimes. One thing I noticed, in fact, I looked at this, I was going to check again to double check, because I'm pretty sure I checked. Because I was thinking how we often say, in a sense, right? So many things we say. Because sometimes you say something and then you say, well, sort of that's in a sense it's like this. In a sense, we're one with Krishna. And in a sense, we're different from Krishna. So I searched for this phrase, in a sense, but I couldn't find Prabhupada saying it. Prabhupada usually doesn't, you know, hedges what he's saying. He just says things really heavy. And we may be hearing and we may think, well, in a sense, yeah, but there's this other side too. But Prabhupada, usually when he's making a point, he's hammering it in. There's a Sanskrit word for this. You know, there are these different nyayas, Ardha Kukuti nyaya, and this nyaya, and that nyaya. So there's one that's called hammering in the post. If you want to tie a horse to a post, you keep beating it and beating it and beating it. So this comes up in Jiva Goswami in his Sandarbha sometimes. You think, okay, we get it, you know. But no, here's another example. Here's another verse. Here's another verse. Or if you read Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's commentary on the Chaitanya Bhagavat, he has some purports like that, where you think he's quoted every verse in the Bhagavatam that has to do with whatever he's talking about, Paramatma or something. There's verse after verse, page after page after page. And you think, well, I get it, okay. Another verse, another, hammering it in. So Prabhupada, even you hear it like on walks, for example, he'll be making a heavy point like that and someone will try to bring in a sense, kind of thing. And, no, do you understand? Get this, get this, get this. So the Bhagavatam does that kind of thing sometimes. It doesn't, you know, pull its punches sometimes. It just says it to make a point. I guess this point would be how important celibacy is. Where in another place there may be some leniency according to the situation and the point that's being made. So the Bhagavatam is a very, you know, it's an elaborate, deep, broad scripture. It makes so many points to, you know, it's all about refining our understanding, really, is what it is. There are so many subtleties. We want everything to just be black and white. I mean, I know I do. I go crazy. I read purports and I think, well, what exactly is, you know, being said here? Is it this or that? But there are subtleties there. I'll just mention this ISKCON Communications Journal. They just, you know, relaunched it. The second issue came out. I mentioned this in my last class, I think. And I received an advanced PDF copy of it. And it's all about hermeneutics. How do we understand things? How do we study Prabhupada? What do we do when he says this in one place and this in another place? How do we react when Prabhupada says things that aren't true about the material world or expresses his opinions that don't seem right or that kind of thing? So the whole, or a large part of that issue is about that. And very thoughtful, intelligent devotees have written very nice articles about that. It's really, I mean, you really see, it's just not black and white. You know, there are ways to look at these things and appreciate them without being offensive. We tend to be so, you know, we're afraid of making offenses, so we try to, in some ways you might say, we become very fanatical. No, it's just like this. Don't tell me anything that, you know, budges me from my absolute conviction about this particular point. Don't give me any gray areas. I can't handle it, you know. But actually, the advanced devotee is called Mahatma. The one reason he's Mahatma is that he can accommodate so many things. That's why it's said that even you can't understand the mind of the pure devotee, right? This is there in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Vigyena Bhujaya. Because, you know, what's going on. Even it's brought up in these essays in this ISKCON Communications Journal, is that, you know, just like Prabhupada himself, he was an Indian in one sense, you can say. So he did things in an Indian way. But he's not an Indian, of course. We know Prabhupada's not an Indian. He's a pure devotee of Krishna. He's a Krishna Bhakta. But still, some of the Indianness comes out sometimes. The culture, the way he was educated and raised, and things that he said from that perspective. So how do we accommodate all of this? How do we take these things without being scared? So I'm applying this to this, you know, this same idea. We come across contradictory things. But that's why, of course, we have to study deeply through the Prabhupada's books and see things from different angles of vision. Prabhupada said Bhagavatam classes for bringing out many different lights. So there's so many lights. Or like a gem. A gem is multifaceted, so each facet gives a different picture, a different look. So Krishna's infinitely, he's the infinite gem. He's Vaidurya Mani. It's like a multifaceted gem. So he can accommodate these things, and we have to, as we mature in Krishna consciousness, be able to accommodate and understand that this is all part of Krishna's glory and the glory of the pure devotee as well. All right, we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.